listening to The Cooler Ring, a podcast made for manufacturing marketers. Here are Carmen Perry and Jeff White.
Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Recording on a beautiful sunny Friday, you know?
You know, it happens once or twice a year in Nova Scotia, so no, always nice when it does that we can be inside in a studio recording a podcast.
And yep.
Wait a second. Yeah, maybe we're losing, I don't know. But anyway, who is not losing today, however, are our listeners, because we have a fantastic guest for them today. I'm really excited for today's conversation.
Yeah, me as well. And I mean, it's a topic that that we have explored, not in this particular way, which I love when we can find new ways to talk about, you know, specific verticals in manufacturing, in this case, packaging, something that is very near and dear to our hearts. You know, lots of clients and guests on this show in that industry, and every one of them has a very unique perspective.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I like about the flexible packaging space, with packaging overall, is that, you know, there's lots of change. That change is being driven by a number of factors. It can seem to be kind of, you know, simplistic when you think about it from a consumer perspective. But then, of course, like a lot of things, you start peeling back the layers on the B2B side of it. And it is a very nuanced evolution that's happening. And it's different in the U.S. versus in Canada, as an example, certainly different than what is happening and has happened in Europe, and the influences between all of those markets. So I'm hopeful to dive into that today. Let's introduce today's guest, Jeff. That way we don't try to talk about it in abstract, because I'm pretty sure he's smarter than two of us.
I think you're probably right. So joining us today is Stephen Clydesdale. Stephen is the Director of Marketing and Product Development at Taylor Prime Labels and Packaging Group. Welcome to The Cooler Ring, Stephen.
Good morning. Thank you. Great to meet you guys and spend some time with you today. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Likewise. Stephen, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and Taylor. How did you end up there, et cetera?
Yeah, so I've had a full career in labels and packaging. Right out of college, I went into a small print shop, and then it's been decades of learning and participating and really becoming a subject matter expert in printing. So I've quickly learned that I love to be right in the middle of everything. So I've been product manager, which has evolved into where I am today, director of marketing. And I've always been, my whole career, right there with the customers, the vendors, with manufacturing, with the sales reps, with the stakeholders, and working on being creative and trying to close a business and bring great solutions to our customers. So about 10 years ago, I came to Taylor in the role of product manager for injection mold labeling, which is kind of a niche-y category for labels. And then just very quickly discovered that Taylor is very innovative. It's a worldwide company. It's about $2.6 billion. It's privately held. It has facilities all across the world. And I'm in the one division for labels and packaging that is really doing some amazing things. And we have great support from our ownership, which allows us to invest and bring innovation to the marketplace.
Well, let's talk about that. I'd love to understand more about the transitions that are underway and the ones that you see coming down the line. So let's start with, what's the big shift that's happening right now, in your view, in labels and packaging? What's the big move that you're seeing?
Well, I love labels and packaging because it's very horizontal. There's so many different solutions, and there's really no silver bullet for any one brand. I'm seeing the pressure of sustainability is really forcing a lot of innovation and amazing change. And one thing I really see is the shift from rigid plastics, rigid containers, to flexible packaging. The flexible packaging is very innovative in what it can do, how it can protect the product. And there's lots of reasons to shift to flexible packaging. And that's one of the biggest transitions I see. I'm kind of a student of labels and packaging. So every day I see something new and discover, wow, look at that. That's super innovative. you know, look what the big companies are doing. And it's right to the consumer shelf. So everyone's seeing and experiencing it.
It's not just in consumer spaces either, is it? I mean, we're also seeing this kind of shift in packaging and in more industrial spaces and verticals that people don't think of as being driven by consumer side sustainability initiatives.
Right, for sure. On the industrial side, we're seeing way more refill situations where I don't have to buy that jug. I can buy a concentrate and then I add it to the base. And it's by getting those concentrates in smaller packages, it reduces shipping. It has much, there's better space savings in my plant and my facility. And it really allows for, it's easy to use, but also it's a good sustainable message. The math on that is very, very easy to figure out as it relates to carbon footprint and transportation and ease of use and all sorts of things.
I can't help but be struck by the juxtaposition, if you will, Stephen, around flexible packaging as being kind of positioned, as you mentioned it, as a bit of the more environmentally friendly alternative to rigid packaging. But I think the people who have only worked in flexible packaging, or maybe that's their exclusive viewport into the world, would say that they're being demonized by the folks who are just anti-plastic overall, and that there's all kinds of talk about how the recycling facilities still don't exist. There's still work to be done in compost. How is that? I guess, do you encounter that kind of yin and yang, if you will, on the sustainability side, or is there not much push and pull of those messages? I'm just trying to think, like, on the one hand, being positioned as an environmental savior, and on the other hand, being demonized.
Oh, we experience that, what you call yin and yang, every day. So part of our job and what we do is education. We're constantly telling the story of what the alternatives are and why these are good solutions. So it really, with the flexible packaging, there's all sorts of benefits with it. And one of the big ones is that transportation cost. So by the number of pouches I can ship in a container is so much higher than the number of rigid containers I would ship on a pallet. So just the number of trucks on the road is greatly reduced. And there's a number of stories out there that talk about that you can read about. It's very interesting. The other thing is you can do the math just really simple, like take laundry pods. So the number of laundry pods in a rigid container versus in a pouch, while it is a similar quantity, the ratio of packaging to pod is greatly reduced in that flexible package. So it's just it's very, very interesting when you really start to look at it that way.
You're also not just talking about kind of reducing the overall packaging, but also in the process of creating the labels, you're doing some innovative things around removing the substrate between the package and the printing. So you're not like necessarily always creating a label to apply to something. Sometimes you're able to print more directly on the packaging itself. What kind of impact is that having? And are the businesses that you're working with seeking that kind of solution out to get a little bit, you know, reducing of materials even further?
Right. Again, as a student of labels, I'm watching the risk to our business very closely. And one of the big things that's coming out is direct to object. So if you look at that Tide bottle of liquid, on the very top of it is a little HE logo. Well, that's directly printed. That's a giant experiment they're running. How do we eliminate the label? Because if they eliminate the label, they eliminate plastic. Coca-Cola ran an experiment in Europe where on Sprite, they eliminated the label. So there's amazing technology that's emerging, like on craft beer cans. Now they can directly print on a craft beer can. They directly print already in high volume, but what about that craft beer that's emerging, those seasonals, those small upstart companies? They can now buy beautiful, low volume, direct printed cans that are just vibrant colors, durable. They've eliminated the label. Sometimes there's a label on there. Sometimes there's a shrink sleeves. But the direct to object is really emerging. In the past 24 months, it has come all across the United States. And it's very, very amazing technology that's happening right now in direct to object. DTO, you can look at that.
And is it, I always find it funny with packaging as well, because there's often a very positive sustainability message. But what really drives the change is sometimes more of an aesthetic consideration or brand presentation consideration. Are you seeing that on the direct-to-object side? Are people choosing that because it frankly just looks cooler or looks nicer? Or is it more on a sustainability-driven decision?
Those guys are... very much the brands are excited about the graphics because they want to tell their story in a very vibrant, awesome way. But right next to that is that sustainable message, because that aluminum can, they get recycled in about 60 days and then it's a can again. The other methods, they may have to undecorate it, get that sleeve off, get that label off. But with that direct to object, it goes right in that recycling sort bin and it's good to go. And it's easy for the consumers. They don't have to think about it. And those people that are in that craft area, they're buying that. They're very, they have a consciousness about the earth and they want to do the right thing. They're young and they're very interested in that. So it fits with their persona, right with the brand. So it's very nice merging of the two.
Interesting to note what you mentioned about it kind of previously being the large, big industrial kind of producers of these things were using these technologies, and now they're beginning to become affordable enough that, you know, small craft breweries can take these things on too. How are you seeing kind of packaging transitioning in terms of, you know, how you support smaller companies or upstarts as compared to your larger customer base?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we've invested heavily in digital printing. So that is very wide, high volume, high speed, but it eliminates plates, it eliminates ink, it's toner based, and it's very durable, and it prints in perfect registration, has amazing graphics. So because it's digital, the barrier to entry is very small. So we have many, many customers that are in that small to medium business. They've got their full-time jobs. They've got an idea. They want to start something on the side. And with the digital printing methodologies, we can support them on their journey. They're going to go start small. We'll build a beautiful flexible pouch that's digitally printed. They'll get their product on the shelf. It'll look great right up against all the big brands. And it becomes a very competitive, disruptive marketplace with that digital printing for those small emerging brands, people with ideas that want to get in the market onto the shelf.
Are you typically serving those lower volume, more startup customers through different brands, through different sub-brands with at Taylor, or do they feel like they're buying from the big boys, as it were?
Yeah, so... Taylor has a number of smaller brands to support the medium, small to medium businesses. That Taylor is, we support amazingly huge companies, but also we wanted somebody that a brand that was very, very friendly, very approachable, kind of has a fun persona. So we have a number of brands that we go to market with. One of them is the Pouch House. It's a web-to-print brand that is strictly for flexible packaging for that small company that wants, I just need a couple thousand pouches to get my idea onto the shelf, my cookies or my edibles or whatever. So it's a method that we've employed that to make it very easy and approachable for these small upstart companies.
How have you found that as an organization to spin off these brands and perhaps market them in a different way or staff them from a sales perspective in a different way from the larger corporate customers? Like, is there a playbook at Taylor for how you spin up a new brand and entity to serve a smaller market or something like that?
Well, that's a culture question. So at Taylor, it's very much an entrepreneurial culture. Our owner, Glenn Taylor, just really wants his employees to be empowered. And if you've got an idea, he's going to support that. we of course, we present ideas and business plans, and he's just like, yes. But when he says yes, you own it. So that's allowed us to really empower us and help us to go and grow and join the business. But also there's a flip side of that. If it's not going well, he expects us to pivot and make the right move and do the right thing. So I've really enjoyed being at Taylor because of that culture. It's really empowered me to be an entrepreneur in a safe environment.
I think we could have spun up a completely different podcast about that culture approach, to be honest.
Yeah,
we've got 10 guiding principles that are all over the place, and we talk about them all the time. It's about how we work together, how we work with the customers, how we're going to all eyes forward and be Taylor United. He's got 80 companies, but we're all going to work together because they bring forth different powerful things. It's very interesting.
I don't want to get too far away from this direct to object transition that's happening, because you painted a pretty compelling picture that this, it's been about 24 months from going from hardly seeing it at all to being everywhere or starting to become ubiquitous. And you mentioned craft beer as an example of that. What are the other categories that you're seeing that are emerging and taking advantage of that direct to object approach?
Yeah. When you think of craft, you say craft beer, but I think craft beverage. So we're seeing kombucha and THC and soda and the whole beverage. Now that 12-ounce can, 16-ounce can, they're perfect base because it has a flat side. So you can direct print right on there. It's very easy. Now they're delicate, so you have to be careful with them. But we're also seeing it in rigid parts. We see a lot of vape cartridges that are a direct object. We're seeing pens and other rigid products. Printing on plastic has been a big industry forever, but this is all emerging into like the power of inkjet and how it can change to a concave surface and the smarts of the computers so they can alter the art. So when it prints on a concave surface, it looks correct. So it's very interesting, direct to object.
I was just I wanted to ask about the direct to object. Is there obviously there's a sustainability component when we talk about removing the label, and the speed of recycling in the aluminum can makes total sense. So I'm assuming that there's technology in what they're printing on what they're using, the ink that they're using, or the toner based solution, or what have you, that's on that direct to object. Has a level of degradability or compostability, or I wouldn't be composting, obviously, because it's not paper, but I guess it has an environmental sensitivity built into it.
Sure, that they don't use plates, they don't use traditional liquid ink, so there's no chemistry in the cleanup of the device. The inkjet technology is very, very fast. And it stays clean. Those heads don't clog anymore. But in the percentage of the aluminum can, the container, it's very, very, very tiny. So when it goes into the smelter of the recycling stream, it is not really a contaminant. They're not like a label will float up and they'll have to skim that. But because the percentage is so tiny and the inks are so vibrant, it really does not inhibit the recycling process. The recyclers really like it, actually.
Say it's interesting because it provides additional sustainability benefits at all parts of the life cycle.
Yeah, very much so. There's on the front end, it's the templates are very easy to do art against. There's none of the setup with plates and ink and the solvents involved. It's very, very clean, quick technology to get to that decorated can.
It's a very interesting and steeped in experience vantage point that you have. I mean, you've been in the industry for a long time. And as you mentioned, you really tried to be at the intersection of customers and product and marketing, innovation, et cetera. So this is where we ask you to kind of polish up the crystal ball a little bit and tell us what's coming. What's the big change that's coming 4 or 5 years from now in packaging that people would be surprised about? They don't see it.
There's a couple of things that I've seen recently that are very disruptive and super interesting to me. Though in the flexible packaging world, the material science is coming along very swiftly. So we're making pouches with the materials are designed really to protect the products. And so it's all about that. Shelf life. How do I extend that shelf life and protect the product? But now they're pivoting to compostable. They're pivoting to recyclable. And that's very difficult to make those. There are out there today, but the shelf life is less. So the science of the materials is greatly increasing to get to the performance that's really required on a wide swath of products. Another thing we're seeing, a lot of momentum in PCR, post-consumer recycled material. So when you recycle your products, they come back around to the film manufacturers and to the rigid container manufacturers, to the folding carton manufacturers. They're accepting that recycled material and they're putting it back into the raw materials. So then we can make a label out of PCR. We can make a folding carton. We can make a rigid bottle out of PCR. So that is greatly increasing. So it's so important for people to recycle in their home. In your industrial site, recycle as much material as you can because the recyclers are accepting it and getting it back into the stream. That's the reuse portion of the recycle story. The other big disruption I've seen is in laundry detergent. They're shipping liquid. They went to pods. Now they're eliminating the pods. Procter & Gamble just came out with an amazing tile. It's a little woven pad. Take that woven pad, throw it in your dishwasher. There's no liquid involved. All the detergents are embedded in that tile. And it's just a folding carton on your shelf. Take one tile out, drop it in there. They're not shipping liquid, which is great for the carbon footprint. Very easy for consumers to use. Just drop it in the laundry and go. So they're rolling that out. You'll see that in the news feeds, and they're running experiments in small markets today. So that, I think, that's the future, is eliminating packaging and doing something really, really, really different.
I mean, it really requires the brands to be thinking of innovations and how they deliver products that people have used or experienced for years or decades. I mean, not just how you get it to the consumer, but how do you conceive of it and kind of make it a reality? The technology for creating and manufacturing is just evolving so rapidly.
But as Stephen mentioned, the carrot's significant on the end of that stick. You reduce transportation costs significantly for a brand the size of, let's say, Tide. Well, now that completely changes the game.
They're impactful numbers. And I see people looking backwards. What was in the past? Because in the past, they didn't have all this science making all these packages. So toothpaste in the past was a little tablet. A little dry tablet delivered in a tin. So they're going back to that. You can now buy a dehydrated tablet of toothpaste and just pop it in your mouth. It wets out and brush. So that's got very little packaging. That tin is fully recyclable. So I see a lot of that. What do we do in the past in the 20s and 30s? Because those were very simple things, organic things. And if we went back like that, it would be very sustainable for now and in the future.
It's funny you mentioned toothpaste. Literally yesterday, I was noticing on my tube of Sensodyne toothpaste that the tube itself was recyclable, but the cap was not.
Yep.
And it just struck me because I never would have thought the tube would be recyclable because, of course, there's always still some product left in there or something. And it's not like you're going to rinse it out. But I would have thought that the plastic hard cap would be the recyclable part. So it is interesting how those pieces are evolving. And honestly, as a consumer, if you're not paying attention to what the packaging tells you in terms of sorting or using, or that it is recyclable now, and previously wasn't, there's a lot of education that needs to happen all the way down. Yep. From the legislation, the regulators, the industry, to the consumer.
Yeah. I would wager that Sensodyne is working on that cap. Yeah, we see that all the time, like Kraft Heinz or ketchup, that the ketchup bottle is ubiquitous, right? It's got the white cap, you flip it and squirt. That cap is not recyclable because it had a little silicone orifice in there that controlled the flow of the ketchup. So Kraft Heinz invested a ton of energy and money in creating a recyclable cap. And they've just launched that. Now that white cap is fully recyclable. And again, that gets back to the power of the big brands doing the right thing. They've got the bandwidth and energy to work on the science to make it happen. So, and they're not very public about that. I know about it because I'm like a student of labels and I'm in the packaging. I get all the trade journals and I read that stuff and I get super excited about it. So I'm kind of a packaging nerd, maybe.
Yeah, I think I saw the article about that as well, because they were talking about they did it in partnership with their packaging supplier, which as somebody who works with packaging companies, I was like, well, that's, you know, proper thing, right? you know, because you often see the conversation kind of boiling down to, we don't provide it because they haven't asked for it yet. Or, you know, it's almost like this chicken or egg conversation. And it was nice to see that Heinz didn't go down that path, but rather it doesn't exist now. We're going to actually bend to the task of ensuring it does.
Yeah, I think that's leadership. Like, we're going to be leaders in this. We're not going to wait for a customer to partner and do the R&D project together, because that's sometimes better from the finance and economics. They're just like, we're going to do the right thing. We're going to work on this and deploy it and get it going. So,
what lessons might we need to learn here in North America from folks elsewhere on the planet? You mentioned Taylor's a large company and serving customers all over the globe, I assume. What are you seeing in other jurisdictions that surprises here in North America?
Well, you had mentioned Europe earlier. I was in Austria snowboarding last March, and I was amazed by the recycling center. Just, you know, in my home, I've got one recycling bin. In Austria, they had 8 or 10, and everything is sorted. So the culture there, the people are really used to sorting, and they're going to sort correctly. I've been in our plants and in other countries, and in the lunchroom, there's no paper plates, there's no plastic forks, there's no nothing. Everyone brings their own plate and fork and the lunch. So there's a lot of, there's just big customer culture shifts in that area. And it has to do with how they've been brought up and where they're at with things.
So. You never know. It takes a while for North America, Canada included, often to catch up to the ideals of many parts of Europe. But I was in Austria last summer. I noticed the same thing. Like, the recycling room was massive.
Right.
Because there was a bin for everything.
Yeah. And I like that. To me, that felt good and natural. And I was like, this is what we need to do. Right. But how do you shift in the USA? There's a lot of opinions out there. So.
Well, that's an interesting point, because these are opinions that the brands encounter as well. Right. And we don't have to look much further than, say, a brand like Bud Light to know why they're not all that interested in being a political lightning rod in today's environment. And it's weird how so many of these topics can get kind of wrapped up into almost like that ongoing a debate of a woke versus not, or what have you. It's like, we're just trying to make better products here. We're not trying to make a political statement.
Yeah. I'm ever the optimist. No, and I see, you know, steps being taken all the time, or they're trying to educate consumers. There's, you know, there's stadiums in the United States where there's, you know, thousands of people going to a stadium, and everything is compostable in the stadium. And the stadium has their own industrial compostable site. So, and they're public about that, and they're educating people about that. You know, when you get your cup, it's a compostable cup. You know it's going to be composted on site in the stadium. Frito-Lay did an interesting experiment at the Coachella Music Festival, where they had an industrial composting site right there at Coachella. All the snack bags were recyclable or compostable. So they feel a little different, and then the people are reading about it. And then that pouch, when it was done, went right into the compostable bin right there at the Coachella Festival. So Frito-Lay was doing this educational component in a thousands of people in a controlled environment to really educate and get the word spread on that. So small steps, it's all going to grow.
These are fantastic stories, Stephen. I think that I love the optimism, actually. I mean, as somebody who's not naturally inclined towards that emotion all the time, I think it's easy, especially, I'll say, for folks who are outside of the U.S. They'll look at the U.S. and be a little perplexed sometimes. And I think it's instructive to say, you know what, there's actually culture shift initiatives happening there too, but it happens in a different way than it does in Austria, as you just talked about. I think that's incredibly impactful.
Yeah, it starts with kids. So today's adults were raised, when they were kids, they had Capri Suns in their hand and they were drinking out of Capri Suns. So right there, they were educated that pouches are okay, right? Now, as young adults, it's very easy for them to shift from, okay, I'm going to get my mayonnaise in a flexible pouch instead of the rigid container. And they really understand the convenience of it, the aesthetic of it, and they're learning about the improved footprint of a flexible pouch. So it's a journey, but it's happening.
Well, great to have you on the show, Stephen. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for sharing it with us. It's been great.
Of course, I had fun. So thanks for inviting me, and I hope it was helpful and interesting.
Absolutely was.
Thanks for listening to The Cooler Ring with Carmen Perry and Jeff White. Don't miss a single manufacturing marketing insight. Subscribe now at kulapartners.com/thecoolerring. That's KULA partners.com/thecoolerring.